We're open for business live.
Good morning. It's just after 9 o'clock. It's Friday. It's the 21st of September 2018. I'm Jamie Veitch, and I'm your host for the next hour for Sheffield Live's business and social enterprise programme, Business Live. And we are broadcasting live through Sheffield Live on FM radio and through our internet live stream. And however you're listening, the programme will also be available as a podcast later on from the Sheffield Live website, Talking Podcasts. Were you listening last week? If you weren't, then you missed a corker, because we were talking gin, although our guest didn't bring any with him to the studio, sadly. But Daniel Shipman was here, and he gave us an insight into the history of gin, from medication, embrocation to ruination. Maybe, maybe not. But there is a gin festival. It's taking place this weekend at Kelham Island Museum. It sounds exciting. You can go along. It's free and you can taste over 100 gins. But Daniel talked about gin and about the hospitality industry. He gave some insights and some tips for anyone who wants to build a career in the hospitality industry too. It was really interesting speaking with Daniel. So if you missed last week's programme, if you missed that podcast, then panic not, because the podcast is up on the Sheffield Live website. Go to Business Live on the Sheffield Live website in radio shows and you'll be able to find it there. But that was then. This is now. Who's on today? Well, I'm really pleased that here in the studio with us, we have Peter Byron. And Peter is going to be talking with us about hearing, about tinnitus, and about his own career, his own fascinating and interesting career, helping people to hear better. Before we turn to Peter, we have Emma Jones, and she founded Enterprise Nation, and she is a Crown representative for SMEs and small business, and we're going to get Emma on the line now. Before we do that, we're going to treat you to some music. Who do we have? We have Westlife. This is You Raise Me Up. This is Business Live, Sheffield Live's weekly business and social enterprise show with me, Jamie Veitch, and Emma Jones is on the line with us. Good morning, Emma.
Good morning, Jamie.
Thanks so much for joining us today. Now, I know who you are, you know who you are, but can you introduce yourself to our listeners in about 60 seconds or so, please, Emma?
Sure. So my name is Emma Jones. I'm founder of Enterprise Nation, which is a small business network. We help people start and grow their own successful business. And I think the other thing you want to chat to me about this morning, Jamie, is that I'm also SME Crown Representative. And what that means is working with government to make sure that they hit this spend target of spending £1 in every three with small firms.
Right, grand. That was lovely, clear and succinct. Thank you so much for that. Now, I want to return to the spend target in a couple of minutes, and I'd also like to ask you about your own story with Enterprise Nation. And perhaps we'll start there, if that's okay, because
sure.
If it wasn't for that, then perhaps you might not have been chosen to be Crown Representative. So tell us about Enterprise Nation and what's the story?
Yeah, so Enterprise Nation was started 10 years ago from Manchester, so just down the road from Sheffield.
Yep.
And we essentially have one key focus, which is helping anyone start and grow their own business. The idea for Enterprise Nation came from my own experience of having started, grown, and then sold a first business, which was a business I launched in 2000 called Techlocate.com.
Yeah.
Kind of launched at the height of the dot-com boom. And we sold that business within 2 years, but kind of that experience of starting, building, selling a company, I could see that more people were probably going to be starting their business over the next kind of couple of decades. And when I looked around, I thought there's not actually that much, and this was, again, back in sort of 2005, there wasn't that much available for people who wanted to do that. So Enterprise Nation was born, as I say, very much to help people, anything from coming up with an idea as to what they can start. We help a lot of people start businesses who are still holding down their day job and building the business at nights and weekends, through to helping existing companies to grow. So we spend a lot of time now introducing business owners to buyers, funders, to journalists to get profile, and also helping them export through things like using the Amazon Marketplace. And we've done lots of international trade trips where we've taken amazing small businesses literally all over the world to open up, hopefully, export markets. So anything you can think of where an individual thinks, right, how can I start and grow? Hopefully, Enterprise Nation is there with the answer for them.
Right, grand. So that's a pretty comprehensive set of supports there, and it's based on your own experience beforehand, and then as Enterprise Nation has developed, you've had success stories from the multitude of businesses that Enterprise Nation has supported, and it's now the case that they're supporting each other.
Well, which is a big thing. You'll know this actually, Jamie, but for entrepreneurs, it's entrepreneurs tend to turn in sort of almost two directions for support. One is to each other, because of course, kind of speaking to someone who's going through what you're going through can really help. But also, we went live with a new version of our online platform in April, which does a better job of connecting small businesses with trusted advisors. So sometimes you do need an expert to help out on anything from social media to accounting to drawing up employment contracts if you're starting to employ people. So our job is to say, whatever your question is, either your peer who's at the same level as you or maybe someone who's a little bit further down the line will have the answer, or indeed we can connect you with someone who's an expert in that particular area. And yes, there may be a cost involved in that because, of course, you know, you should really pay for experts' time, but we can connect you up with these advisors who can help.
Yes, absolutely. So that's very valuable for entrepreneurs in terms of the advice and the expertise that they need. And as you say, connecting people with folk who can help them, and the best person to help you and to help other people. Great. And your role as SME Crown representative, then you talked about encouraging and achieving the target of £1 in three spent with SMEs. Is that correct?
That's correct. By 2022. So just a little bit of background to this is there was a great man in government a few years ago called Lord Young, who was he was the man behind startup loans coming to market. He introduced something called growth vouchers, which was a program where small businesses got some money from the government to access advice.
Yes.
And one of his other key areas of work was, you know, surely one of the best things government can do when it comes to small businesses is buy from them. And I think every small business would agree with that. So he kind of came out with the first comment to say, let's try and ensure that 25% of central government money, I should kind of make it clear that sort of the role of SME Crown Representative and all the work that I do in a one-day-a-week role is around central government spending this target, so it doesn't involve local authorities. But he said, let's aim for 25%. Then we had another great minister called Matt Hancock, who came into Cabinet Office a couple of years later, and he said, never mind 25%, let's up it to 33%.
Okay.
So, yeah, that's where the figure of let's try and spend £1 in every three, that equals about £15 billion worth of products and services that government buys every year. And the aim is to kind of get much closer to reaching that target by 2022. So everybody's got very focused minds on that at the moment.
Grand. Okay, so that's fascinating. And we're talking about central government contracts and contracts for both services and for goods. Is that correct?
Yeah, so this is one of the interesting things. In the sort of 18 months that I've been in role, my job is, I guess, kind of two things. It's one is to listen to what entrepreneurs are saying to me in terms of the barriers that they're facing in selling to government and maybe why they haven't even considered selling to government. And the second is to kind of convey what's happening in government back to SMEs. And maybe we'll come on to what is happening in government in a minute. But back to that point, as you kind of question, is it products and services? Lots of business owners think, there's no point in me considering government as a client because surely they won't buy what I sell. But of course, over the past 18 months, I have very much come to understand that government literally buys everything from baked beans to submarines, literally, and everything in between. So pretty much regardless of what you sell, whether it be food and drink, garden services, graphic design, corporate uniforms, there is pretty much, if you think of government, it runs buildings, it runs services, it runs prisons, hospitals, etc. I had a call the other day with the man who runs the contracts database for the blue light service. So this is ambulance, fire, police, and it's just incredible. So of course they buy cars, you know, they're buying sort of lots of services for their people. So I think entrepreneurs, one of the key points I've tried to communicate kind of over the past 18 months is whatever you sell, there's probably a market there for you. And actually just a really easy way of checking this out is there's a single portal website where all government contracts valued over £10,000 sit on one platform, which is called Contracts Finder.
Yes.
And it's really useful for small business owners just to go onto Contracts Finder and literally kind of pop the search term of what you deliver in the search box, and then what comes up is contracts that are looking for that particular product or service. So that's usually just a kind of a good first way of identifying contracts that could suit what it is that you offer.
Absolutely. So that's great advice there in terms of looking on Contracts Finder, and I'll tweet the link out to that afterwards.
Brilliant.
And I've noticed that although there's a statutory requirement of 10,000 or more to go on that, lots of organisations are posting lower value contracts there as well now, which is good news in terms of finding them.
It is. And there's one other development that is sort of more slowly, but it's happening a little bit more at pace now, is government's largest suppliers are also putting their contracts on Contracts Finder. So by that, I mean that when small business owners sell to government, you can either sell direct, so you know, maybe the Ministry of Defence or Department for Work and Pensions have got contracts for what you offer, so then your client is the government department. But one effective route to sell to government without having to complete the bid work and sort of manage the administration is to sell via the companies that are kind of government's largest suppliers. So these are companies like Serco, G4S, Sodexo. You may not kind of know those brands, but they're the people who do lots of facilities management. Again, they manage lots of government properties, buildings, services, etc. And increasingly, they are putting their contracts on Contracts Finder. So if I'm Sodexo, which is like a facilities management, they deliver food and drink in lots of buildings, and I'm looking for local food and drink suppliers to, you know, deliver services in government buildings, I will now put those contracts on Contracts Finder. So essentially, that's a long way around of saying for small businesses, it's a really good place to look for central government opportunities, but also now opportunities that are coming from the big firms, and they want more small businesses in their supply chain.
Right, that's really interesting. And again, that's good news and a good tip for listeners who want to get into those supply chains, sell their services. Thanks for that, Emma. And I think in terms of other routes to win contracts, some folk say to me, it's easy to be cynical, isn't it? Some folks say, oh, there's never any point putting in a response to an invitation to tender. You know, they all know who they want to appoint. And I say, well, you can't possibly win work if you don't respond to an invitation to tender.
You've got to be in it to win it.
Exactly. And you can't then moan about the contract being awarded to someone else if you haven't gone for it. Is there any other advice you'd give people to in terms of how to win government contracts? I think that's been very helpful, what you've said already, but any other sage
there
advice?
There are other points, and one that actually addresses that issue that you raised, Jamie, which is, again, and I've heard this many times, is small business owners say, inevitably, this is going to go to the big guys, you know, there's no point in me bidding. And so one thing, and you mentioned at the beginning, maybe I wouldn't have got the role if I didn't run Enterprise Nation, and I'm sure that's the case because at Enterprise Nation, we represent lots of small businesses. But I think one other reason why I hopefully secured the role is because Enterprise Nation itself pitches for public sector contracts. So we have first-hand experience of, you know, how to sell to central government. It's been a learning journey for us as much as it is for any small business owner. And the one thing we have come to understand in my business, but also I see this reflected a lot across lots of others, is the businesses that tend to do best in selling to the public sector get involved in what's called early market engagement. So lots of government departments now host events, meet the buyer events, In fact, again, since I've been enrolled, we've run 3 Meet the Buyer events across the UK where we've had lots of buyers from lots of different departments. Free events where small businesses can go. They can meet the buyers when the buyer is not necessarily in buying or procurement mode. So
yes,
there's maybe no procurements out currently. And it definitely is worth literally getting to know the buyer, because then when the buyer is thinking about coming up with a form of tender, what quite often happens now, and you can see this on Contract Finder, so on Contract Finder you can search just for early engagement exercises. And what that means is buyers come out to the market, they say, this is what we're thinking we need. Do you have any input? Are we thinking the right things? And it's really good if small business owners can get involved at that stage, because then you very much are considered as part of the bidding. What is more difficult for small business owners is putting in a response to tender where you don't know the buyer, you're an unknown entity. So that is harder. If I look at Enterprise Nation experience, most of the contracts we've secured is where we have known the buyer, worked with them previously, maybe in a different guise. So I do think that kind of definitely helps. But in terms of tips, I guess there's a couple of sort of tips that I like to offer, because hopefully they're quite straightforward and most people can action them relatively quickly. The first is to kind of understand your strategy when it comes to selling to the public sector. And by that, I just mean figure out if you do want to sell direct to central government, or do you want to make friends with the tier one suppliers and go through that route. So that's kind of step one. Step two, look for the contract opportunities, and Contract Finder is definitely a source of the information there. And the third is almost to kind of ready the business for the process of tendering. And all that involves is things like having insurance in place, because most invitations to tender require certain levels of insurance.
Yes.
So make sure that's in place. When it comes to actually responding to invitations to tender, and these are the documents that buyers come out with, it's really like answering an exam question. You just have to read the question really carefully, give exactly what the buyer's looking for, put your best foot forward. And the only other thing I would say is, if at first you don't succeed, and it's quite unusual that businesses of all sizes actually succeed on the first kind of pitch to the public sector, be sure to ask for feedback from the buyer, because buyers are expected to give feedback, and I do think that helps small business owners just kind of improve for the next time round. So there is actually, if you just Google SME Crown Rep, on my SME Crown Rep page, there is actually a free guide that you can just download, which is called Selling to the Public Sector. So it's something we released last year, but it's still very current, and it gives all of those top tips, plus some case studies of businesses who've done it really well.
Brilliant. And again, I will tweet the link out.
Lovely.
To that. So followers of Jamie Veitch or Sheffield Live will be able to find it. So thanks for that, Emma. That's really helpful. Really excellent advice for folk. So just to pivot quickly, you've written a number of books yourself, and I know that those books obviously are really helpful for readers, and they must have been helpful for you as a business leader in terms of people understanding that you know what you're talking about and that you you can give people sage, helpful and really solid advice. Now, if anyone's listening to the show and they want to write a book in support of their industry, what sort of advice would you offer them?
Great question. And it's funny, actually, that you say that hopefully writing books has given me that credibility to say that I know what I'm talking about. I haven't actually written one for a while, so it just made me think when you said that. I hope people don't think I'm out of touch anymore. But yes, advice I would give, it's interesting. When we published my first book, so my first book was called Spare Room Startup, How to Start a Business from Home, came out in 2010, if not a bit earlier, actually, which is quite embarrassing, because when I look back at that book now, there was no mention in that book. So it was all around how you start a business from home. There was no mention of Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, because these platforms did not exist at the time of writing. So it's kind of incredible to see how business has moved on. But when I published my first book, I guess went down, and subsequent books actually, went down the traditional route of approaching a publisher, So the route I took was I approached a publisher called Harriman House, who've published all of our books, and presented to them a case which went along the lines of the number of people starting a business is growing. In that particular case of spare room startup, it was the number of people starting a business from home was growing. I could see there was a gap in the market. There wasn't a book that was particularly focused on that subject. So for the publisher, what they essentially want to see is, who is the audience that's going to buy this? Why is there a gap in the market? How big is the audience? And critically, what are you, the author, going to do once the book is published to promote it? Because I think that's one thing is I've had lots of conversations with people who think that once the book has been published, it just sells itself. But actually, it's almost the work starts on the date of publication.
Absolutely.
Because, you know, you have to do the book tours, you have to try and encourage people to rate you on Amazon, etc. So I went down that route. However, the advice that I do give now to businesses is definitely still consider the publishing route. I went to a book launch last week of a brilliant entrepreneur called Jason Stockwood, who's just written a book called Reboot, which he's done with Penguin. I think it's with Penguin. So he's gone down that route. But advice that I give to many business owners who want to become the expert in their field is to consider self-publishing. So there's two great platforms. Again, these didn't exist when I first published, but there's one called lulu.com, L-U-L-U, and another one called blurb.com, B-L-U-R-B.com. And these are brilliant platforms because you can go on, you can upload your content, images, click publish, and you become a self-published author of whatever it is that your area of expertise is. And the thing that I like about these platforms is you can make your work available for free. So it could be something that you say, if you become a new client, you get a free copy of my book, or customers and, you know, your community can come on and pay for copies of it. So actually I am considering another book at the moment. I probably will stick with the traditional publishing route because they come with distribution channels into the likes of WH Smith kind of built in. But self-publishing has really opened up the world of publishing to many people, and I think that's why it's such a popular format. But, just to answer the question, Jamie, it is a great way of hopefully giving you the credibility that you do know that kind of particular area of your field, because, of course, writing the book itself makes you research it and speak to lots of people, so it is a good practice.
Brilliant. That's excellent. Very helpful advice, and really interesting to hear your experiences as well in this, Emma. So thanks for that. I'm going to close off with some rapid-fire questions, if I may. And I know that you're really active and responsive as well on Twitter. So we'll give out your Twitter handle, if we may, later, because hopefully if folk want to learn more, they'll be able to follow you on Twitter and engage with you.
Yep.
But if I can... ask you for some rapid responses,
sure.
some quick-fire responses to these. First of all, top two tips for protecting against factors that businesses can't control but that will affect them. And we all know what's coming, Brexit, except we don't know what's coming, Brexit. So, so when it comes to resilience and protecting against factors that are going to affect you, what's your advice?
Yeah, so one is get access to support. So surround yourself with people who are experts in the areas that you're not. And the second, which is a little bit more difficult, is just be resilient. And I don't know if that sounds helpful or not, but, you know, one of the great attributes of entrepreneurs is whatever kind of life, politics, the economy throws at them, they can just still keep on working through it. So be resilient, but what helps with that is absolutely surrounding yourself with people who are good in the areas that are not necessarily your strong suit.
Okay, grand. Now, you've mentioned Lord Young earlier on in terms of the support for entrepreneurs and small businesses, startup loans and so on. And funny enough, I was talking with a former chief executive of the Young Foundation yesterday, Baroness Glenys Saunton, and Young Foundation in terms of Young's namesake there. But can you let me know who's inspired you, Emma? Who else has inspired you in business?
Oh, wow, loads of people. Lord Young is definitely one. My mum, she ran businesses when we were kids, so that was definitely an inspiration. another guy, there's a guy called John Moulton, used to be a very active venture capitalist.
Yep.
I learned a lot from him. And then there's someone who, so there's lots of people, many people still now. Gary Turner, who runs Xero, is a big inspiration. But there's one person who I've never met who's been an inspiration, so kind of from afar, but kind of a business heroine for me is a woman called Martha Stewart. And people feel this is quite odd because she actually did a spell in jail. So people are just like, what? Why is she your inspiration? But a brilliant entrepreneur, despite the jail sentence. I kind of used to consume information all the time in terms of how she built her business. So she's been an inspiration from a distance, but I really do feel kind of blessed that I've, you know, kind of managed to interact with a lot of people who've built amazing businesses in the UK, and I've just kind of sucked up everything I can in terms of learning from them. So, yeah, many people.
Brilliant. Well, that's been absolutely fascinating, really helpful. Thanks for that, Emma. I'd love to get you back on the show in the future to talk again. Really helpful tips here. We all know, and it comes up ever such a lot on the programme, that mentoring and support for entrepreneurs is vital, and many of the successful people who are running businesses and social enterprises on this show and have gone through all sorts of challenges on the way, because let's not think it's easy for anyone. Many of the people who come on this program have talked about how vital it has been to them in terms of getting mentoring, support, advice to access to advice, and so on. So I would encourage people to check out Enterprise Nation, and there's a call to action in itself. Can I leave you to give a final call to action yourself? Where can people find you? What would you encourage them to do?
I guess anyone who's thinking of starting a business and is listening in, I'd say just take one little step towards it, because essentially kind of starting and growing a business is made up of just lots of little steps. And anyone who's growing and thinking, is this the right time to feel confident about growth in light of all the things that are coming down the line, I would say I think there's some great opportunities for small businesses to do things like access funds, sell to bigger retailers, go global. So I'd say if you're thinking of starting, take one little step. If you're thinking of growing, definitely now is a good time to go for growth. And as you say, Jamie, we'd love it if people did come and visit us at enterprisenation.com. There's loads of information on the platform. We do events up and down the UK, literally every day of the working week. So it would be great to welcome all your listeners.
Wonderful. Well, Emma Jones, thank you so much for joining us on air today. It's been a pleasure speaking with you. Emma is SME Crown representative and founder of Enterprise Nation. Emma, thank you.
Thank you so much, Jamie, for having me. Have a good day.
Thank you. You too. And you're listening to Business Live, Sheffield Live's weekly business and social enterprise programme with me, Jamie Veitch. We've just been hearing from Emma Jones, SME Crown representative, founder of Enterprise Nation. Lots of tips if you want to win contracts with the government. If you've only just tuned in and you've missed it, panic not, the podcast will be up on the Sheffield Live website from about 11 a.m. But I'm delighted now to turn to our studio guest today. And Peter Byram is in the studio with us. Peter, good morning.
Morning, Jamie.
Thank you so much for coming in today.
You're
really
very well.
Do appreciate it. And we dragged you in early against battling the flood water here in Sheffield.
It wasn't too bad this morning.
Do you know, I was in London yesterday, and getting a train home was somewhat challenging, but there we go.
I believe it was quite late,
James. Yes, indeed. So, Peter, I know you run Peter Byram Audiology, but can you introduce yourself in 60 seconds? What do you do?
So my main thing is looking after people's hearing.
Yes.
And that involves things like wax removal and managing tinnitus and undertaking medico-legal hearing tests for people who've got noise-induced hearing loss from work, and doing reports from that. Travel as far as Plymouth to do that sort of thing.
Yes.
Locally, a lot of hearing aid work, a lot of people who struggle with the hearing and need to hear better. A lot of business people come in to see me, particularly because they have difficulty interacting with clients. And I think that's one of the key things that I wanted to chat about this morning.
So that's really interesting, and I want to put a good focus on that, because If you're running a business and you perhaps feel that that is holding you back with clients,
yeah,
you might not realise that solutions are out there.
Well, that's right. And a lot of people are very worried about their image, because we were all taught that our image is key when we're interacting with clients. And sometimes people have this feeling that if I have hearing aids in, I'll look a little bit old, too old for the game, or will I look like I've got a disability? And there's nothing wrong. You know, I wear hearing aids. They are brilliant. They make life so much easier. But people do have this feeling about it, this, you know, this concern and this worry. But actually, I think the concern and the worry should be on the other foot, in that they should be worried about not grasping what the client is asking. And I wonder just how much business is lost through people not providing the right answers or providing the right details because they've not heard properly.
Yes, I wonder how much it is. And sometimes that's a sort of invisible loss, isn't it? You don't know you've lost it. But,
And I think one of the things is that people often don't really realise or maybe don't want to accept it. So I do see people who you can say, here's the hearing test that shows the hearing loss, and they're very aware it's there, and their family and friends have started telling them, but they just find it difficult to accept. So, you know, it's that accepting is part of it.
Right, that acceptance is key. Yeah. And then you can do something about it.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And so you have been on your own journey here.
I certainly have.
So tell us about your own experience and your own discovery about this as well.
Well, I'll start off when I was young. So I went to a decent school, but yeah. I didn't really enjoy school much, and I only came out with a one O-level in geography. And I went to work on a building site, and that was great, but I was exposed to quite a bit of noise. And unbeknownst to me, I did end up with a bit of a hearing loss from the noise. And so when I decided I had a bad back and I wasn't really coping with all the weather and the weight and the dirt and everything of being a builder, and I wanted to change and use my brain a little bit, I thought, what can I do? And I looked at all the different options on the table, and the last thing that was there, because my mum was taking my grandparents to the local hospital, was audiology and hearing aids. Oh, you ought to go and do that, she said. I don't want to look in ears. I don't want to, you know, deal with old people. Well, it was the last thing on the list, and I went and did a week's work experience, and I loved it. And so having found something I loved, I went on a journey, and I started doing GCSEs, and I did a BTEC and some professional exams and a healthcare diploma and a Bachelor of Science at University of Leeds and then an MSc. And so I had this big journey of having found something that I really enjoyed doing, but also was really pertinent to me, because I ended up starting using hearing aids when, you know, I was still training.
Yes.
So that was really good. So my journey has been quite interesting, and I've got tinnitus as well. So when people come in and say, I've got this awful noise in my ears and no one understands, I do.
You do understand, yeah. Absolutely. So, yeah.
So it's great. And, well, you know, a lot of people do struggle with it, and there are things generally that we can do to help. You know, we can't get rid of it, really, but we can manage it, and that's the really good news.
Yes, okay. That is the good news in terms of it can be managed, and you made a bit of a discovery when it comes to how to manage tinnitus as well.
Yeah, so, I, you know, there are lots of ways to help with tinnitus, but one of the ways is dealing with hearing loss. And for a long time, a lot of people have fitted hearing losses that were very evident.
Yes.
What I looked at was hearing losses that were very, very mild, only just there. And for some people, you know, the majority, and not everyone, but for a reasonable amount of people, when we put hearing aids into a very mild hearing loss, the tinnitus subsides. Now, for some people, it just disappears, so they don't hear it while the hearing aids are in. For some people like me, it just takes the edge off it, so that it goes from really loud to just background noise. And you can handle that, because it's a bit like the fridge or, you know, the fan in the background. It's not too difficult. Some people, hearing aids, it doesn't make much of a difference. And, you know, that's what tinnitus is like. You know, you can't guarantee anything to anyone, but you can say that in most situations this helps.
Right.
Obviously, so that's a really good discovery. So people who have a very mild hearing loss, who probably don't even know it's there, come in, have a hearing test, see a little mild dip. Sometimes it's from noise exposure, and then try a hearing aid. And quite often, that is the thing that really helps them. And people have said to me, do you know what, Pete? I was lining up the place on the railway tracks where I was going to jump.
Good grief.
And then I came in to see you, and you put the hearing aid on, and all right, it's not got rid of it completely, but I can live now. And that's just overwhelming that you've been in that situation. It's not isolated. There are, you know, a number like that. And not many people get to that stage, let's be honest. But it's just good to know that there are some things that can help, even if you don't think there's a problem with your ears. It's worthwhile getting them checked.
Right. And this is transformational in terms of the actual impact on people's lives. I mean, I know you're not making promises of transformation to everyone, but you're saying it has been transformational to lots of people.
Yeah,
absolutely. So absolutely remarkable. And you've alluded to your education there, which I know actually is really, really interesting, because you talked about school, and then you talked about work, and then finding something that you absolutely love, and that's a massive motivating factor, of course.
Absolutely.
But then I know you've been really interesting in terms of your education journey, because you've studied later on in life.
Absolutely.
So tell us about that.
Well, it wasn't easy.
No.
And you know, when you are doing your studying and you're getting married and then you've got a mortgage and kids and house, I owe an awful lot to my wife, who supported me through that. And I think, you know, if you're trying to do a job and study at the same time, there's not much space for other things if you want to do well. So, you know, it was a hard graft.
So when was this exactly? When did you do this?
Well, I got my degree when I was 40. And my MSc about when I was about just before I was 50. So,
right.
So, yes, it's really hard work, and it meant quite a lot of, you know, being tired and up late and, look, you know, doing all the research and studying. But it's well worth it. There are a couple of real gems from the journey. My dad gave me a motivational tape once, and this woman was talking about, you know, looking at where you want to be.
Yes.
Don't look at the final destination. Bear it in mind, that's the mountain. You just need to take the step. And that has been with me for years. So I've just been taking the step, and each step, you know, at a time. And if you can do one step, then you can do another. So that's the short-term pain, long-term gain. And the other one is a real inspirational guy, very, very successful, but very humble. And, you know, we'd a family friend who we'd visit, and you'd arrive at his house, and he'd be cleaning his car, and he'd clean yours as well.
Right, yeah.
That sort of level. And he just said, I mean, he's run many businesses, and he just said to me once I got my MSc, the world's your oyster. And that was just such a something to hold on to and treasure, because I just felt I could take on anything and do anything. It's been the case. It's fantastic. And to be able to go from... So when I started working in the private sector and leaving the NHS, what I wanted to do was provide something a little bit more than what was available.
Yes.
And have a breadth of devices and technology to use. And now have that from completely invisible implanted hearing aids that are staying there for 8 weeks at a time, and then you pull them out, the Lyric invisible hearing aid, to tiny things that sit behind the ear. Those are more appropriate for some people, to FM systems. So a lot of people in business will have difficulty in meetings. Well, nowadays, we've got really tiny, discreet, in fact, probably nice tech devices that sit in the middle of the table.
Right.
And they really help people, you know. So you can pick up the meeting from all the way around, and that's very, very helpful for people, particularly in the business situation.
Yeah, so these are really discreet. They're really effective.
Yes, absolutely, yeah. I mean, some people have quite bad hearing loss, and you can't always bring people back to what they used to have when they were a teenager.
Yeah.
Nothing ever works as well as that. But the difference between the you know, what you can get as a freebie on the NHS to the high technology level. It's fantastic.
So just tell us a little bit about your career history then in terms of working in the NHS and working within private practice yourself and how you've made that transition and why and so on. And you've alluded to the fact that that enables you to offer further more solutions and more.
So, age 25... just done two. I'm from the dark side of the Pennines.
Right. Okay.
So I'd been to Bury College and Bolton College and done maths and physics. And I started work at Barnsley because I'd just been looking for audiology jobs. And that was the first thing I could get hold of. And it was supporting someone who was on maternity leave. So they said, come in, act as an assistant. We'll teach you up a bit and we'll show you how to do the basic stuff. Great. Off I went. But I was doing three GCSEs, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday evening. So Barnsley College, Monday and Tuesday, and Wakefield on Wednesday.
Yes.
I didn't have the qualifications at that time to get into work as an audiologist.
No.
But obviously I was aiming for them. But a job came up at the Christmas.
Yes.
At the Children's Hospital.
Ah, okay.
And I thought, my goodness, you know, this is the job I want, but I haven't got the qualifications. So anyway, I went and did the interview, and they gave me the job, and I got 8 stars, obviously, because I was really keen.
Yes.
But it had meant from Sheffield, I was travelling to Barnsley Monday and Tuesday, and to Wakefield on Wednesday, just to do the GCSEs to make sure I could carry on.
Okay, yeah. Yeah.
Then it was a BTEC at Stradbroke College.
Yeah.
And then after that, Nottingham, the Rope Walk House is a big audiology centre.
Yes.
And I did the professional exams there, and you have to do professional... you know, you have to be assessed whilst you assess someone and fit someone and review someone. I did all that. And that was then, the you know, you were qualified, but I wanted more. I really wanted more. And I'm not sure what was driving me then, but maybe it was the prospect of, you know, I wanted to go along a little bit more with my career.
Yes, yeah.
And there was I wanted to do a degree, but they wouldn't let me do a degree until I'd done a diploma.
Right.
So it was University of Leeds diploma,
yeah,
then onto the degree, and that was great. That taught me an awful lot. But the MSc was the really brilliant thing. You know, hard work, but being able to then take the little bit of research I'd done with the tinnitus and the hearing devices and go and speak in Berlin at the international seminar, that was 2014, I think.
Right.
It might be 15. But that was just such an exciting time.
And what was the focus of the research that you were presenting?
It was the very mild hearing loss with the hearing aids and how tinnitus helps.
Yeah, I see,
And we got some really fabulous results. And yes, again, not for everyone, but as a something that can help, it's definitely in there.
Right, grand.
So that's my education. My wife says... no more. So I've said that's fine.
But who knows? Maybe it's a case of never say never, and in 10 years' time we'll be speaking with Professor Byram.
I doubt it. At the moment, business is taking all my time up.
Yeah.
I have very little spare time to do things like study.
Yes.
So, I mean, business is... it's funny, isn't it? Because business isn't always about... going doing the job. It's that, you know, managing your appointment booking and clients who have got problems with the hearing aids, you've got to then go back and see them. And you know, because hearing aids, they break down occasionally. You know, whichever one you buy, they're never perfect.
No.
So you've got this ongoing workload, and you need to look after your website, and you need to look after the calls coming in, and it's just... my next step is outsourcing, so I'm just starting on outsourcing, just to take some of the weight off me.
So you're on a journey as well.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. And I suppose up until relatively recently, you haven't had to do... You've had to be the expert. Of course, you're the expert, but you haven't had to do the running the business side of things. So
the business has been running in the background as a part-time thing for about a dozen years.
Yes.
And but November 2017 was when I jumped out of the NHS. NHS is a great institution. It was getting a little bit, I would say, a little bit difficult to enjoy.
Right.
And I just thought, you know what, this is the time to go. And it's fantastic. It's gone so well since then.
Yes.
It's better than I can ever believe. So I'm really happy.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
That's great. And that's obviously a testament to the fact that what you're doing can indeed be transformational to people. We talked a little bit about if you are in business and you're potentially worried about the impact of hearing loss.
Yeah.
Don't pretend nothing's happening. It's much better to do something about
Absolutely. It. Absolutely. And the other thing about that is, of course, that if you're concerned about your employees, you know.
Yes.
A lot of companies that have employees that are exposed to sound, they all have to check their hearing on a regular basis.
Yes.
But actually, do we have the health check for our employees? Is that something that's looked at? Are we concerned they're not picking everything up? Mm. You know, we could make it such a difference for our employees as well.
We really, really could. No, yeah. That's a very important advice. And lots of businesses here in Sheffield use healthcare schemes to support their employees.
Absolutely.
And through those healthcare schemes...
Well, some will obviously test, but not everyone. But, you know, if it's... I'm going to put myself out there. You know, if you're a company and you want to get your workforce tested, I'm out there.
Yeah. Well, I think it's. I've promised to let you out of the studio within seconds now, and I don't want to hold you up. But I think it's worth giving folk a call to action to find out more about you, because Peter, you're. You've got a website. People can contact you online. There's a phone number they can contact.
Okay. I'm going to give a little bit of a shout out for an old-fashioned thing.
Okay.
Okay. So a lot of people used to use the old Yellow Pages, didn't they?
They did.
And the Yellow Pages were fab for a while, and an internet came on, and they just dropped off.
Yes.
But actually, they're really good today. And if you're going to do anything, I mean, I've got some Google reviews as well, but I've started building up a load of reviews on Yale.com.
Right.
And if you look at who's available to do audiology, hearing tests, hearing aids on Yale.com, you'll see that there's me, but there's a few other people as well. But there's only one person that does reviews. And if you look down at those reviews, you'll see that I've got something like 45 or 44 four stars and one, so five stars and one four star.
I'm looking right now.
And I think that is an absolute key tip for anyone, because you can get, you know, free listing on Yale.com.
Yes.
Why is nobody using it? I'm flabbergasted, because a lot of, you know, and again, a lot of the older folks, if you're dealing with the elderly, it's something they remember, something they use from the past. So I think that's a really good one. So check me out on Yale.com.
Okay, Peter Byram Audiology on Yale.com. I'm going to tweet the link out, so take a look. But if you just go onto Yale.com and search for Peter Byram Audiology, you'll see what people have to say about you. That's really helpful.
Thank you.
Well, Peter, I just want to thank you so much for coming in today.
Oh, it's been great. Thank you so much for having me.
And love to welcome you back on the show. I know you're really, really busy. So, but thanks for taking the time today. I really do appreciate it.
You're welcome. I'd love to be back, and thanks very much.
And you're listening to Business Live, our weekly business and social enterprise program. We've been talking with Peter Byram. We're going to take a quick break for a track of music. This is Daft Punk. Harder, better, faster, and stronger.
We're open for Business Live.
This is Business Live, Sheffield Live's weekly business and social enterprise program with me, Jamie Veitch. We've been talking today with Emma Jones. She has been telling us about how to bid for and win government contracts. Emma is the SME Crown Representative. She is also the founder of Enterprise Nation. If you've only just tuned in, Emma has lots and lots of tips which you've missed, but you haven't really, because you can catch the podcast of the Sheffield Live Business Live radio show. Go to sheffieldlive.org, find radio shows, look up Business Live, and the podcast will be there. Also on the show today, we've been talking with Peter Byram, and Peter runs Peter Byram Audiology. He was telling us about hearing loss and dealing with hearing loss. Fascinating speaking with Peter. He also talked with us about doing a degree and then a postgraduate qualification later on in life. Really interesting. So thanks to Peter. Thanks also to Emma for fascinating interviews, which you can catch On the podcast part of the website, if you've only just tuned in, if you've missed them, what else is going on in business and social enterprise? Well, the Business and IP Centre Sheffield has a whole range of events coming up to help you if you are running, starting, launching, growing a business. So lots of events to help you. Take a look at Eventbrite and look up Business and IP Centre Sheffield for details of all their events and book yourself on. Also, the VAT Breakthrough event, they had a seminar, a workshop this week at Union Street, but they have more coming up in October and November. Again, Google VAT Breakthrough Sheffield for details. What are you up to in business and social enterprise? Get in touch. Drop me an email, jamie@sheffieldlive.org. Text 07904 272 200. Find me, Jamie Veitch, on Twitter. Find Sheffield Live on Twitter as well. If you're running or starting a business or social enterprise, this show is for you, and we're also always keen on hearing from you. So that's it for today. Thanks so much for listening. Thanks to our guests, Emma and Peter. Thanks also to Sangeeta in the studio as sound engineer. Next up on Sheffield Live, our fantastic folk music programme. Thank goodness it's folk from 10 all the way through to noon.
Sheffield Live. Made in Sheffield. Made by you.